This program is a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and is brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guests, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.
97 Gold presents Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Now, here's Faye Bagby on 97 Gold.
Good morning.
Good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful day.
Yeah, it's been a little hot, but other than that, it's wonderful.
Well, everybody should have their hat on and be under a tree and fishing.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. It's probably nice to be a fish right now because you'd live in the water.
That's right. Well, you can see how I think when it gets this hot. I get a little bit goofy.
It starts to fry your brain.
Yeah, I'm thinking about being on a beach or being at a creek. If anybody has a creek, you know, with running water and a few fish, I mean, just sit back and read a good book and have something cold to drink.
Oh, boy, that does sound nice.
Yeah, I mean, the heck with all this being out in this hot sun.
Yeah.
It's just too powerful.
Yeah, you can cook meat and eggs and everything, pancakes right there on the sidewalk.
I don't think there'd be any problem at all. You could do it, and people would probably come and help you.
or eat the pancakes.
Or eat all the pancakes. Oh, me.
Wow. Could be a new business venture right there.
That's right. It wouldn't cost a lot.
Yeah. Faye's Sidewalk Pancakes.
That's right. Sidewalk Pancakes. I love it. Oh, I might just start that business any day.
Yeah, well, if I don't take it first.
That's right. You might be ahead of me.
All right. So other than that, I guess we probably ought to give out the phone number.
Let's give out the phone number. It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So what's your week been like this past week? Because I know people are anxious. You know, school is getting out. Some places were out last week, and some schools just got out, you know, within the last couple of days. And so people are planning vacations. And when people plan vacations, they start to think, man, wouldn't it be great to just be able to do this, like, all the time? And that's one of the joys of retirement is that you can, because at that point, you're on vacation all the time, but you have to have the right money set aside. In order to do that. Otherwise, you're having, you know, vacation and retirement and all that is just, you know, sitting on the front porch and not going any further than that. And that's not a good way to do it.
No, it's not. And, people want to go on vacation all the time. They've got to get their house in order. You've got to plan carefully. You've got to have your 401k working for you. Your IRA has to be working for you. And those CDs need to be out of the bank and working. You know, CDs don't make any money. They used to. 15 years ago, you could make a pot full of money on your CDs. That's when interest was 18%. But when it's 1.5 and 2, it's not going to help you. And you don't need to be backing up. You need to be going forward. And the only way to do it is to plan it and plan it carefully.
So do you find that people come to you often, especially in the last couple of years, maybe with some CDs that have been just sitting there and they forgot about them and they said, hey, these aren't really doing anything. What can you do? Have you seen an increase in things like that?
Yes, I have, because people look at those CDs when they come to and said, what am I doing? You know, this doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And older people are always afraid to move their CDs. They have to really think about it long and hard, and I understand that. But, you know, I just can't understand just leaving it and not making any money.
Why are people so hesitant to move, do you know?
Oh, they've banked there all their life, and they keep thinking interest is going to improve. They think things are going to get better, you know, and they don't, but they just kind of procrastinate. You know about that.
Oh, yeah. You said that a time or two.
Yeah, I have. And people with CDs do procrastinate. They intend to come talk to me. They think about it. They're going to. But, my gosh, it takes them a long time. It's worse than men. Now, men procrastinate worse than women ever thought about. But people with CDs do, too.
So it's basically just a matter of people, it's what we've always done. We've been here forever. We're comfortable with it. It's not hurting us. And so we're not really going to do anything about it.
Yeah, and then one day they wake up and they say, you know, we need this much, you know, I think, to retire. We like this much. We could have already had it done, you know. And then they go, well, is there any risk? Well, yes, a little bit. But is it as risky as the stock market? No. You know, older people have to kind of get into the modern world. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They have to realize things that used to work don't work now. We need some new ways to do business, okay?
Yeah.
And I don't want them to go out here and go out on a limb and do something foolish. You know, I was reading this week about a preacher up in Oklahoma, and he talked to all these people in buying these old bonds. Now, these have been around forever, from Mexico and France, all these places, but they're worthless. They were issued like 1800s.
Oh, wow.
And nothing was ever done with them. And every once in a while, somebody will be able to get their hands on some of those. And so then they go to work on people and say, you know, we can buy these for a certain amount. We're going to make all this money. It's not going to happen. The government's declared years ago, we're not paying those old bonds off. In other words, they're defunct bonds. And yet, you know, they'll fall for something like that.
So they're not even worth the paper they're printed on.
They're not worth one dime. You could paint your walls with them. You could put them up in the den. They're souvenirs, what they are.
Ah.
Oh, yeah. And every once in a while, and I know about every 5 or 10 years, I'll hear about those bonds again. And they're worthless as a paper that they're printed on. You know, but they look pretty. You know, they look old, and they are old. And they've got some pretty writing on them, and that's as far as it goes.
Well, that's what's important, as long as they have pretty writing on them.
Yeah, but I wouldn't want to get stuck with those.
No. And so if somebody comes up to somebody and they say, hey, I've got these old bonds, run like crazy.
Run like crazy, because you don't want to end up with those old bonds, you know, that you have to tell people that you lost your money on.
Yeah.
You know, and... every once in a while, a promoter will come through town, and he'll get a few people, and, you know, he'll talk them into giving him $5,000 or $10,000 for some of those old worthless bonds. It's
wow.
Crazy.
I have to be honest, I haven't heard somebody really use the word bonds in years.
Well, that's it. I mean, these old things. Well, I know the Mexican bonds, I've seen at least 3 times in my lifetime. You know, people coming around saying, you know, we can buy these for almost nothing, and they're going to pay them. They've decided to pay them. That's not true. You see Mexico paying defunct bonds?
I don't see anybody paying defunct bonds.
Well, I don't think anybody ever will. But every once in a while, a promoter will think that, or maybe he knows the difference, but he'll talk to the people and buy them.
Wow.
You know, parting with their hard-earned money.
And then before you know it, that guy's out of town, and you can't find him, and you're just stuck.
You can never find them again. They're gone.
You got some very expensive paper on your hands.
That's right. And all you did was have a fun little trip, you know?
Yeah.
Down memory lane. And that's just not worth a hoot.
No.
So I like to tell people, you know, I think this is not as safe as a CD. Nothing is. But the risks are small. They're not huge risk takers. And we don't do anything speculative. Everything goes through the bank. The bank pays the people. The money is put at the bank in escrow. We pay the money out when we buy the policies to the, you know, the policy owner. And when the people pass away, again, the bank pays them. So it's all through the bank. It's not through my company. Never, never. I never let them put up a dime with me. I never have. And that way we know the money is always safe, you know. And that way when it happens, we notify them that the policy has matured, and the bank will go and get a certified death certificate. They send it in to the insurance carrier, and they pay. It's just that simple, you know.
So,
and we've had some go over. Now, that's a risk. It can go over, and you have to pay premiums. But sometimes the premiums aren't bad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The only premiums that are bad are those old, original ones, okay? And the rest of them are pretty good premiums. I don't think they're bad at all. And it may delay your payment a year or 2 years, whatever, but you're still going to get your principal and your interest. They're not going to ask you to take a discount. They're not going to ask you to take less than what you've got coming, okay? So you're still going to make about the same, other than a little bit of premium you'll have to deduct. But it won't be a lot.
Is it fair to say that, you know, in order to make a little bit of money, you have to take a little bit of risk? I mean, I can't think of any situation where you would make money where you wouldn't take some kind of risk. It's just a matter of leveraging how much risk, you know, what kind of ends justify the means, you know, and how much of a risk can you afford? Is that a fair assessment based on, like, the options that are available in today's landscape?
I think so, because it's all relative, you know. Lots of times people take a big risk because they think they're going to get a big payout, and that could be true. But I'd rather not take a great risk and know what I'm going to make, okay? Because with us, they know exactly what they're going to make going in. They know if it's a 24-month, they know they're going to get 24%. You know, if it's 18 months, it's going to be 18% because we pay 1% a month. And if it comes in early, you're still going to get that. Whatever we promised you to start with, if it's 18 or 24, 30, whatever it was, you're going to get that, plus your interest. You always get that interest. Nobody's going to steal that interest from you. So that's what I like about the investment.
So the value of an investment when you're looking into a life settlement type of investment, as opposed to like Wall Street, for example, the value of this type of investment, it holds its value. Whereas on
Wall
Street, it
will hold its value. That's right. Because remember, it's a life insurance policy. The value cannot go down because when they sold the policy to these people, they said, okay, here's a $1 million policy we're going to sell you. The face amount is $1 million. It's not going to be less. The only thing that could be less, if you had to pay some premiums, and it will come out of your pocket on that extra premium. So, you know, you could have a little bit there, maybe $500 or $1,000. But it would not be enough to really bother you, you know. It'd be so small against what you're going to make. So if you're making 24%, that's certainly $1,000 isn't going to hurt you, is it?
Yeah. So the value of the policy holds. The value of the investment holds. You may just have to pay a few fees, you know, against it or whatever, you know, if it does go over or something like that. But as far as the value itself, it's going to hold in a life settlement type of investment. And you don't get that in Wall Street. And do you get that in any other type of thing? I'm trying to think of...
I don't know of any. I really don't. I don't know of an investment that it's going to hold a value like this does because it's a life insurance policy, and I don't know how, you know, how it could go down.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to pay you the face amount, and of course the people that own the policy, remember, they discounted in order to get us to buy their policy, so there is interest in there and principal. So that's why they make the extra money when they buy these policies.
I see.
So it's a win situation for everybody involved. The people that need the money so desperately need to get their treatment started. So they're behind the eight ball trying to, you know, get some money out of their insurance policy where they can start treatment. And treatment right now is really expensive. You know, there's this new medication they're talking about that is $1 million.
Oh, wow.
And I don't even know who can afford it. They'd have to go put 100 people together, 200 people, you know,
yeah,
to buy the thing. But medication is expensive. Right now they're spending like $100,000 a month on treatment for cancer. Everybody wants to live. Everybody's doing their best. But when you have cancer, the risks are high. Your risk of not making it is very, very high.
And so when people find out that they've been diagnosed, and we're only talking about stage four, these are the only policies that you'll even bid on or consider bidding on are stage four. And so when somebody is diagnosed with stage four cancer, they're facing a number of options. And one of those options is treatment. And like you say, they're very, very expensive. And so what they need is they need some way to come up with some fast cash. And in many cases, the best way to come up with quick cash is to sell their life insurance policy. But somebody needs to be there to buy it, and that's where you come in.
That's right, because if they don't know where to go to sell it, they're still in trouble, you know. And, of course, that's why every state has insurance brokers that they can go to their insurance broker and say, look, I need to sell my life insurance policy. Who would buy it? Well, most of them in every state knows who will buy their policies. You know, and we buy from licensed providers. And these providers work with all the insurance agents, you know, to get the policies. Mm-hmm. That's how they do that. And it's like us. We hope to be able to buy them direct in the next 6 months. We're going to try to get that other license where we can do it direct to help the people. And what that means is there's no middleman then. We're you know, rubbing out the middleman and trying to help the people direct because it will save them more money. And but you have to do that. You have to go through all that in order to do it. The people that we use now are licensed in almost every state. Mm-hmm. You know, they represent people in just almost every state. Now, I never hear them talk about Hawaii or places like that, but I know they do represent almost every state.
So when someone comes to you for the first time and they say, Faye, you know, I've been investing in Wall Street for 40 years. That's really all I'm familiar with. I can't quite grasp the concept of investing in a life insurance policy. What do you tell them? What's the first thing you say just to really put it in simple terms for them so that they understand the concept?
Well, you know, I explain to them it's an investment. You know, first of all, we're doing an investment for them. And in order to do an investment for them, we have to buy the policies from the terminally ill people. If they're not terminally ill, we're not going to buy them. So we don't get every policy. And I explain that to them. And I explain the due diligence that we do. You know, we have everybody looking at these people. When we're looking at their policy, we look, first of all, what date did you buy the life insurance policy? What all treatment shows up on the application? We want to know, you know, when did you get cancer? Hopefully they got it a long time before they bought that policy, because you have to have it, you know, in place if you get sick. It's like any other kind of policy. You can't run out and buy it after they declare you sick. You've got to have owned it for a year, 2, 5 years, something like that, you know, before you try to use it. And then you find out, you know, you have cancer, that you're going to need to sell your life policy in order to come up with a lot of money, you know. It's so expensive. You know, they're looking at several hundred thousand dollars. And they want to leave their family something in addition to that. So that's why usually they'll take out a policy that's $500,000, $1 million, or even $4 million, you know, where they feel like their family is protected if something does happen to them like this.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of these policies that you're bidding on are pretty high-dollar policies.
A lot of them are, yes. We bid on a lot of $2 million and $4 million policies that they've bought, you know, that in case, if they're an executive especially, if something happens to them, this will give the wife the money to raise the children. It'll give them the money to finish paying for the treatment. Even people with quite a bit of money, you know, a cancer plan can be awfully expensive. They can still almost use up all the life proceeds sometimes, you know, just getting the treatment.
So a person is diagnosed with cancer, with stage four, and then they sell the policy, and then you bid on it against other companies. And I know I'm kind of streamlining the process here, but basically this is the short of the story. And so you bid on these policies against other companies, and if you're awarded it, now you've got this policy, and it becomes an investment and an opportunity for people to make some money on it, because the original policy holder, they've already got their cash sum out of it. So they've got their money, and they're, you know, doing doing their treatment and doing the things that they need to do. So they're at that point basically out of the picture. So now you've got this life insurance policy, and people come in and they invest in this, and basically at that point they're just waiting for the policy to mature, right? And that's a simple
version, right? That's right, because they can go on with their life working and doing their daily things, and the investor doesn't have to think about it until he gets the call from us or the email that says, you're in policy number so-and-so, it has matured, you know, you will get your money in 6 to 8 weeks. That happens all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I haven't had anything happen in 2 weeks, but, I mean, up to the last 2 weeks, we've had a lot of policies mature, and millions of dollars has been paid out to our clients. And I think there's still maybe two more to pay out yet that we're waiting on. But it's been a wonderful year and a wonderful summer so far. And with the maturities, it's really going to help a lot of people, you know.
Do you find that people who have been in Wall Street for years and years and years try out a life settlement, realize, hey, this is a much better type of investment. It's safer. I don't have to be up all night worrying about my money because it's still growing. Do you find that people make that switch and then pull out completely of the stock market? Do you even recommend that? Do you recommend, you know, being diversified a little in Wall Street?
Well, I want them to be diversified, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a lot of people lately that are getting ready to retire. And I know they've brought like $1 million over to us. And it's right out of their 401k. And they said, Faye, you know, we've had good luck with you, and we want to give you the rest of this money. So, you know, once they learn to trust us, once they know that we're on their side and that we're going to make them every dime we possibly can, you know, they come back and give us more money. And it's worked that way since the day we started. And so, you know, it may be a year before we get that next payment, or 6 months or 2 years. But they always bring extra money over and put it in because they have made quite a bit of money. And you know, the ones that have done so good, you know, they had extra money to start with. They just weren't comfortable with giving it all to me until they knew that we would do what we said we'd do.
So it ends up being basically mailbox money. They set it and forget it.
That's exactly right. They don't have to check it every day. They don't have to check it every month. And, of course, having people that are worth either worth $1 million accredited, or they make $200,000 a year, makes a big difference. Because if they're not accredited, and we've got a few that are not, they get to needing that money, you know, and say, "Oh my gosh, you know, they're having panic attacks. We need some money." So it's always best on this particular investment to have someone who is accredited. Always get that accredited person. And then it won't hurt them if it goes over. And if it's not, and they are in this, it could hurt them because they're going to start needing money because they didn't have what the others had in the first place.
So a life settlement is not the type of investment where if you're hanging on by a string, this is not what's going to pull you out.
No, no, no. You need to be substantial and have a substantial assets to do this. It's really not for real poor people. It's not for people who've got $10,000, I can tell you.
Mm-hmm. So what are the what does it take to get accredited?
Well, if you're accredited, you're worth $1 million without your home, and you have a lot of different investments, maybe a ranch, maybe rent houses, some in the stock market, some in a 401k. They have all kinds of investments. And when you add all these up, usually it's way over $1 million. Sometimes it's just $1 million. But it can run from $1 million to $5 million. So, you know, that way you know they're not going to need it right away. They have other money. They have emergency money. And people that don't have a lot, they don't have emergency money. You know, they're going to need this immediately as soon as they get their hands on it. So it's not good to do that type of business.
Because you're cutting it, that just cuts it a little bit too close.
You're cutting it real close, and we don't want to do that. I want people that are happy, that don't need to take their money out you know, for 3 or 4 years. And then if they take some out, it's not going to hurt. They've got other money to replace it.
Mm-hmm.
They've got other money they've been sitting back holding.
Well, that's one of the risks with this type of investment is you can't get to it. It is not liquid.
If it's a 12-month policy or 24-month, you cannot get to that cash until the policy matures and we put the money back in your account again.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's the type of investment. You put it in there and you hold till they mature, and then we roll it over for you again because most people have an IRA with us. And if you have an IRA, you can't take it out anyway. You need to roll it over and keep rolling it over until you retire and start taking money out. And you can take money out. Once you retire, you can live on your investments, which is a good idea.
So that's one of the risks is that it's not liquid. And so people need to know that going in. And so if they have some kind of an emergency or if they need to buy a new truck or something happens with the house and they need to replace it or whatever happens, they can't get to this money. And people know that going in. So and I know there's three major risks. What are the other two?
Well, one of them is, of course, as you just said, is that you can't get to it until it matures. So they have to always know that. And we've already given them the first risk. The biggest risk of all is they might have to pay premiums.
Mm-hmm.
And if they didn't have any money, they couldn't do it. So it needs to be someone always that has other money that could pay their premiums, okay? And then the third risk is if a life insurance company ever went under, And that's your least risk because they're all worth millions and millions. And they're huge companies. And they have more in escrow than you and I would ever even believe. We wouldn't even believe it, probably.
But that has never happened in Texas before.
No, it has not. We've not had anybody go broke. And remember, we also have the Texas Guarantee Fund. If a company ever did go broke, you would have that to back up to get your money.
So it's almost like there's a backup of the backup.
Yeah, on a lot of it, there is a backup on the backup, which protects you. And we've got all the other protections in place. It's done at the bank. The bank pays you. The bank pays the premiums. That's your safety net right there. You've got all these safety nets with this product.
Okay. So
and you need safety nets.
Oh, you do. And people, they don't, they want to make sure that they've got the safest type of investment possible. And so I think a lot of people, at least what I hear from people when I talk to them during the week, is that, they're really nervous about Wall Street because, anything can happen that affects their investment. And so years of investing can be wiped out literally overnight. And then they've got nothing. And then they've wasted 5, 10, 15, 20 years of investments and have nothing to show for it. So they're looking for safer types of investments. So I know we talk about, these policies are all those of people who have been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And so I know that people generally know that that's a very serious thing. Once you're diagnosed with stage 4, that's about as bad as it can possibly be. But I know that people also don't necessarily trust it. So if they want to really understand the investment itself, like all the details, what's going on with the policyholder, what kind of shape is this person really in? They want to really understand the investment. That is very possible because this is an open, transparent type of investment.
That's exactly right. And, when we read these, we study them and study them to be sure we're right. And a lot of times I'll say, I've got two opinions. Give me a third if it's several million dollars. Sometimes I say I need that third opinion. And that's because Fasano is such a they're just great. They know cancer. They know it well. And they know how many months. And, of course, they're conservative. And they'll say more months than it's really going to be. And I just trust them. And then the other two are good. 21st Services has gotten real good again. There for a while they weren't as good, and everybody complained, and they started spending more time, on their diagnosis, and that helped a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when these people go and get these diagnoses, lots of times they do weird things, like they want to go to Mexico or South America and get all these crazy treatments instead of saying, I need to get on the treatment at home right away. I need to do the surgery like they're saying, and then I need to follow through on everything they say, like whether it's the chemo, the radiation, or whatever it is, and try to make it through this.
Mm-hmm. So, in addition to these medical experts, and they get their professional opinions, and they're on record, and they say, okay, we believe this person may live another 24 months, or whatever the case may be. In addition to that, the investor can come in and find out all this information, and that's where you bring in page 14.
That's right. And page 14 starts out and says, this is the person that's insured. This is their age. This is the type of cancer that they've got. This is the diagnosis as to how long they're going to live. And you come on down through there. Okay, it's a $1 million policy. And it says, well, how much are you putting up? Okay, you're putting up $100,000 on that. So that means there are going to be maybe 8 more people in this policy. And then it tells you what your profit is. It tells you if it goes over, what will happen to you, how much premium you'll have to pay. It gives you the whole thing. It tells you what percent of the deal it is. It tells you what percent you would have to pay if it goes over. So you know all this in advance. We're not hiding anything. There's not anything we're not going to tell you.
But
we're going to tell you everything we know.
Wouldn't it be great if everything was like that? Like for those who are investing in Wall Street, wouldn't it be great if they got a report that said, hey, on March 14th, the market is going to crash? But that's not possible.
That's right. And if they would tell them, here's what your risk factor is.
Yeah.
This company has borrowed this many millions of dollars. This company, has a bad CEO or a good CEO, whatever the difference is, and tells you how long it's going to take for them to get their money.
So a life settlement is a very well-informed investment. There's no guesswork going on. You know the risks. You know how much is going in, what you're going to make. If it does go over, you know how much you're going to pay. You know these fees. I can't find another investment that is this well orchestrated.
I haven't either. If I did, I'd be doing it.
Yeah.
But I haven't found anything that works as well as this. I have so many people that have had, like 3 or 4 come due this year. And, they keep up the good work, Then I've got somebody, that may say, it's been a year since I've had one mature. And remember, most of these policies are 24 to 30 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it's usually not tomorrow or the first 6 months that you're going to get paid. And then we have the ones that do come in early, and they're 24 months or 30 months. So those are the ones that really make them a lot of money because they come in early and they're still going to get paid that 24% or 18%. They're just getting it early. So there's never a deal that says we're going to pay you less than what you've got coming.
Perfect. Perfect. All right. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
And every Saturday morning around this time, we always get into trivia. So, Faye, what is our topic this morning?
It's little children.
Oh.
Everybody ought to like this. I figured we need some good laughs on Saturday morning. And I'm going to tell you what these little children said. Now, these are little children that have been going to Sunday school, okay?
Uh-huh.
So after the christening of his baby brother in church, Jason was just sobbing all the way home in the back seat of the car, and his father asked him 3 times, Jason, what is wrong? Finally, the little boy replied, that preacher said he wanted us brought up in a Christian home, and I wanted to stay home with you guys.
Wow, it's like that show. What was that old show, Kids Say the Darndest Things?
That's what this is. They say the darndest things. And then we had a little 3-year-old girl. Her name was Caitlin. And she had been learning the Lord's Prayer. So several evenings at bedtime, her mother would repeat after her the lines from the prayer. Finally, she decides she's going solo. So the mother listened with pride, and Caitlin was carefully saying each word right up to the end of the prayer. Then she said, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us some email.
It's close.
It's close, isn't it? And then there was a Sunday school teacher asked her little children, and why is it necessary to be quiet in church? One bright little girl replied, because people are sleeping.
So interesting how kids see the world, isn't it?
Little kids see things so differently. You know, everything we do is a serious business, and we're serious all the time. And I thought, you know, a few of these lighthearted might really help us. So then there was a little girl, and the teacher said, "Now, who lived in the Garden of Eden?" The little girl answered, "The Adamses." then there was the Sunday school teacher instructed, "Write what you know about the Last Supper." A little girl wrote, "I was away for that. I had the measles." And this is probably the best one. A wife invited some people to dinner. At the table, she turned to their six-year-old little girl and said, "Would you like to say the blessing?" "I wouldn't know what to say," the little girl replied. "Just say what you hear Mommy say." The little girl bowed her head and said, "Lord, why on earth did I invite all these people to dinner?"
Oh, that's hilarious.
I mean, you know, and let's see, the other one said, Mother was preparing pancakes, and she had three little boys, Kevin, 5, Ryan, Altus, and the boys began to argue who would get the first pancake. Their mother saw the opportunity for a moral lesson. She said, "If Jesus were sitting here, he would say, 'Let my brother have the first pancake. I can wait.'" Kevin turned to his younger brother and said, "Ryan, you be Jesus."
Oh, that's great.
Oh, I mean, you know. And then the teacher asked, "Okay, what was Jesus' name?" He said, "We know Mary's name was Mary." But then said, "What was Jesus' father's name?" And little kid said, "Virge." And the teacher was confused. She said, "Where'd you get that?" "Well, you know, they're always talking about Virgin Mary."
Boy, isn't it strange how just one little different take on one syllable can make all the difference in the world.
It does. Now I'm going to give you some recipes.
Oh, okay.
Everybody needs recipes.
Sure.
Now, this is from some pre-K little kids. And it is absolutely hilarious. So the little pre-K class, they told them they were going to make a little cookbook. And they said, "Each one of you give us a recipe for the cookbook." Well, needless to say, Ethan said he was going to do eggs. Of course, it doesn't list any eggs as an ingredient. but he put in the recipe. Pancakes, sugar, and Skittles. And he said the prep time is a full hour.
Oh, boy.
But you only cook the dish for 2 seconds. And Ari Ann said she wanted to make macaroni. So here's her ingredients for macaroni. You put apples, strawberries, toys, a backpack, and a doll. That's how you make macaroni. And so then she says, this is what you have to do to finish it. Well, she said, the oven has to be hot like fire, like a candle, like for birthdays. Then you need to tell everyone it's time to leave. And I have to leave, she said, because I'm going to a party with a swimming pool. My sister says, why do you go to the swimming pool? And I say, because I like it. Now I go home, and I'm waiting for it not to be hot. And then my sister says again, why do you do that? It's because you blow in the macaroni so it won't be hot. You need to wait. Okay, now it's done. But you have to go away and come back for it to do that.
Oh, it's all in the details. It's how, it's the process of getting it done.
That's right. And the last one is from a little boy, and he said, first, I don't remember anything about tacos. He said, I just can't remember. He says, can I change that to cheesy roll-ups? Because they're super easy. There's only 3 stuff you need. You need white cheese, yellow cheese, and tortilla. He said, I don't even want to make tacos anymore. I don't even know how. It's too hard to think about tacos, but I can make cheesy roll-ups. They're easy. They come from Taco Bell. I just need, I need yellow cheese. I don't know where to buy the white cheese. I don't know how to make tacos. Cheesy roll-ups are better. I do know how to make them. Let's see. One time I made candy, and it turned brown. I don't want tacos anymore. I like them, but I love cheesy roll-ups. I don't like beans because they make me throw up. My mom made me eat a burrito one time with beans, and I threw up. Wait. I know how to make watermelon. Let's just buy watermelon and eat it. And then Sebastian wanted to do pancakes.
Mm.
He says the only thing you have to have is one ingredient, salt. And that's all you have to know. Oh, my gosh.
Wow. I don't know if I'd like those salt pancakes.
Well, I don't know either, but I'm telling you, when you make an egg dish, that little boy said, oh, you don't need eggs to do it.
No, you need pancakes and Skittles.
That's right. And now these are four-year-olds. These four-year-olds are adorable.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I love everything they did.
Wow. How genius. It really kind of... It shows how much differently they see the world than we do.
That's right, because, you know, we're all so serious all the time.
Yeah.
And, we would never think about anything as funny as what little children say.
I know.
I mean, gosh. And I thought about them all getting out of school right now, and I thought, you know, we need to know what little kids are thinking.
Yeah.
And they're thinking funny things.
Oh, that's the best. You realize I'm going to try to make pancakes now out of salt just to see if I can do it.
Just see if you can do it. Well, make some of this egg dish without the eggs. I want to see how that turns out.
Yeah, I'll let you know what happens.
Oh, wait. And the mother that told the little girl to pray, you know, she should have checked that first, see what that little girl was going to pray about. Can you imagine how embarrassed she'd be?
Why do we have to invite all these people over here?
Yeah, why do we have to invite them to dinner? Wow. Your face would be so red.
I bet next time Mama gets the prayer approved ahead of time.
I think I would. I don't believe I'd ask a child anything I didn't know what they were going to say.
Yeah, that could be embarrassing real quick.
Yeah. Because they're going to tell you what they really think, you know?
Yeah, they don't have that filter that we do.
That's exactly right.
Oh, boy.
But I thought how cute that would be this morning.
Oh, that is cute. This is Your Money with Fay Bagby. The phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage, my favorite store.
Now, we should point out that that's your office number, and obviously there's nobody there today because it's Saturday, but next week they'll be back, and you'll be able to take appointments and sit down with people and really get this whole plan going, and that's really what it's all about. It's about the planning, because when we talk about these investments, it's not just a one-time, hey, I'm going to invest in this, and then I'm gonna you know, make all this money overnight, and then that's it. This is part of a plan, and this is something that you want to plan out over several years. You want to get into several different investments. You want to almost stagger, am I saying this right way, to like stagger these so that hopefully something is being paid and then something is being invested in and something is getting paid, and that cycle continues, and that's how you build your wealth over time.
That's right, and you always want to be diversified. If you're diversified, you've got something coming in almost all the time, and if you diversify, you may have one policy, it's 100, 150,000, 175, whatever. But it gives you more opportunities to make money, I think, because you've got something from different people. It's not always one cancer victim. So that's the way I like to do it. And everybody always asks me when they come in, Faye, what do you recommend? I say diversification.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, how much that I have in the bank would you want me to put in? And I always say, let's see what your situation is, then I'll tell you how much money I think you should invest now and how much you need to keep in the bank for emergencies. Because I always recommend 50 to 100,000 at least for emergencies at all times.
So you look at somebody's situation, and you can basically analyze and kind of make a very informed estimate of what they should have for emergencies based on their past history, where they want to go, where they are now, and where they want to end up being in several years for retirement. You look at all of those pieces and put them all together, and you look at the big picture when they're planning this out, right?
That's exactly right, because we're looking at down the road. You know, is it 2 years to retirement? Is it 5 years to retirement? Seven? Or are you going to retire in May? I've had this happen to me. They drop it on me a month before and say, Faye, I'm retiring in 30 days. Well, we thought that person was going to go out 2 years, and they just got tired. They just said, we're tired, we want out, you know.
So has that actually happened before?
Yes, it has.
And what do you tell somebody when they say that?
I said, well, we better get busy. So I said, you know, how much are you going to have on retirement day? Because they've already got money with me, but we didn't have everything. So they tell me how much they're going to bring over to finalize the package. Then we find out, are they moving to a new area? Is the new house going to be paid for? Are we going to have to give them money out of their investments to finish paying for it? Are they going to have enough out of the old house to pay for the new house? All this is important. So we figure out how much they're going to need every year, how much we're going to have to put up in an account for them, and what the living conditions and the taxes will be where they're moving. And a lot of people, as I said, they're moving to Granbury. They're moving to Fredericksburg. Most people are moving where there's a lake and a golf course,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So we just kind of anticipate what the taxes are going to be every year. Are they buying a boat? Will the wife let them buy a boat? I mean, there's a lot of questions there. So we go through all that. And are they supporting any grandchildren? Do we have to leave money out for that? You know, half the world supports their grandchildren. And I'm no exception. So, you know, you have to know how much emergency money we're going to have to really set aside. And I make sure that they've still got group insurance and that they're going to keep that group insurance until at least till they're 65, 66. Now, a lot of people are going to go on Medicare. And so they'll have Medicare for most of their hospital, you know, or medical expenses. But then some of them might not be going to go with Medicare till 70 or 67. So they have to keep their group insurance for a while. Now, if they retire early, they're going to need that group insurance. And, you know, you just have to cover all the bases. House is paid for. All the cars are paid for. Their credit card bills are current. And, you know, they don't have any outstanding debt. It's easy to plan if there's no debt.
So when is it too close? Because I hear from people all the time, and they say, you know, geez, I want to retire in 5 years, but you know, I I've waited too long to start, and so now it's just not even worth it, and I'm just never going to retire, and then blah 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 blah. So
that's not good.
No, that's not a good situation. You have to get started, obviously, as soon as possible. But at what point is it too late? Like, how far out from retirement is just about too late to start?
Well, it depends. Now, let's say that these people have got $300,000 in their 401k. Well, they can go ahead and start and take it out of the 401k if they're close to retirement, and we can put it in policies and start getting them, you know, more money. But if they've got $100,000 and that's all they've got, if they're not working for a big company and they've just got about $100,000, they're in deep trouble. It's too late for us to help them. Because if you've only got $100,000, it would take too long to build that up, you know, if that's all you have in the world. But most of our people come to us, they've got, you know, $250,000, $300,000, half a million or $1 million. And it's a lot easier when you've got that kind of money.
So obviously, it's obviously never too early, but You really got to get started. So if anybody is thinking about retirement, or as you always say, is procrastinating and they're looking at it and they're starting to think, well, geez, you know, I'm in my 40s. I think maybe I only want to go maybe 15, 20 more years. You better get on it. This would be a good time to start the process and come down and at least talk to you and get some information, right?
And we have a lot of young people. You know, we have a lot of people. Their parents started their plans for them. Their grandparents started them with us. So they've already got, you know, $200,000 to $300,000. Already with us. So they're already making money. And so they started young. A lot of them started right when they started with college. The parents put up money for them. And they are making money now. So they will have, should have a lot of money by the time they retire in 40 years.
So do you have a bunch of people who like as adults have been investing with you for a while and now they've started their kids and at some point the kids will take over their own investments?
Yes, and on the kid deal they still see after it. They don't let them run wild with the money, but they've got good solid investments with us and we've got a lot of that. And then we've got some people they put their parents in with us. So I've got I've got the college kids on one side, the grandparents on the other, and the people in the middle.
So this is really something for really the whole family. It's not just single investor. It's, hey, we can get the kids involved and get them started on a path so that by the time they retire, say if somebody is starting in their early 20s, say they're in college and they're around 20, 21 years old, the parents get them involved. If they keep on this path by the time they retire, say they go the full distance, say they like going to work and they retire, you know, at 62 or 65, that is literally 2/3 of their life that they've been investing in. So they're going to be in very good shape. Or on the other hand, that sets a kid up for really early retirement, and they might be able to retire at like 40, 45. Is that right?
Yeah, and this is true. We had some people last year and the year before retire at 58 and 59.
Wow.
They had made enough money with us that they were able to do that.
What about the
now
person
they're
who's
just enjoying life and traveling?
Yeah, they're doing all the things they wanted to do.
And, you know, a lot of guys, they're out in their boat every day. Uh-huh. And that's a good thing. You know, they're happy. They like the solitude. And then a lot of them are traveling with their wives all summer. So there's a lot of things you can do if you just get busy and have your investments right where you're ready for retirement at whatever age you call it, you know. A lot of people, as I said, are calling it early right now.
So what about somebody who's self-employed? They own their own business. Is this a good investment for somebody like that?
Yes, a really good one for someone like that because they're not restricted. They can take their money and put it with us, and it's not like when you've got a 401k, sometimes you can't take all your money out. Sometimes you can only take a percent, and sometimes you have to wait till you retire, and you don't have to do that. If you own your own business, you can invest anytime you want.
And so for somebody who does own their own business, the value of the business counts towards getting them accredited, right?
Yes, it does. That's where their assets are, is in their business.
Okay. For somebody who's never done this before and they're looking at a policy for the first time and you show them the paperwork and they're reviewing this and they're looking at it and they're kind of going through it, what kinds of things can they expect? What are, say, three indicators of a good policy so that they know, hey, this is a really good investment? What types of key indicators would somebody be looking for?
Well, first of all, if I've bought it, you know it must be good. That would be number one. They've already bought this policy, okay? Okay, when I start out looking, I look and see how old they are, what their fat index is. If they're obese, obese people do not live as long. Then I look and see when they first contracted cancer. Then I look to see where it has spread. If it's in their ribs, their spine, their lungs, you know, I know that it's already metastasized, and we know they're not going to live as long. And I look to see how many places it is in their body. And if it tells, well, in 14 they had it here, but in 15 it spread, and in 16 it spread here. So that tells you it's spreading rather quickly. If they say this is a cancer they've had for 10 years, we know it's so slow spreading they might not ever pass away.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to look at all this, how long we think they're actually going to live, with how much treatment they're taking right now. Have they had surgery? If it says it was inoperable, we know it's a really good policy. We know it's too close. to call. So we're looking at all those things.
So you're checking a number of factors. It's you're looking really at the big picture, not just zooming in on, okay, this is stage four, and it's...
No, you can't do that, because stage four, you want to know what all has happened on their body.
Yeah.
You know? And then you make sure that a person might not be stage four, might be stage three, and it might be in remission.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a good policy, but not for us.
Yeah.
Lot of people can sit there and wait for the remission to come back. We can't.
Yeah. And there's plenty of people out there. I see commercials, you know, on TV all the time. You know, hey, we buy life insurance policies, you know, and they show, you know, some people who are out, you know, walking around and enjoying life, and they're like in their 60s or 70s, and they're trying to sell their policies. Those are not the kinds of policies that you're looking for. So when people are looking at this...
No, those are not. And those are people that just don't want their policy.
Yeah,
and they want to pick up some money. And no, we're not interested in that. They have to have cancer. It must be stage four, unless there's a couple of cancers that only come to stage three. And that's okay. But the others must be stage four. And when I'm reading, if the doctor says this is stage one, I just tear it up right there. It's time to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when people see those on TV and they see those commercials and they try to connect that to this, they shouldn't. Two totally different things.
It's two totally different, because those are people that are in good health. They just want to sell their policy.
Yeah.
And so ours have to be really sick.
Okay. So for somebody who's coming to you for the first time and they're not used to this, they're used to getting up at midnight, they're used to getting up at 3 in the morning and wondering, oh my gosh, am I worth anything anymore? Or, you know, has everything just, you know, gone down the tubes and all of a sudden I got to start over again? When they see this for the first time and they realize that a life settlement is not affected by anything else that's going on, because we know how unstable Wall Street can be. So when they find out that a life settlement type of investment isn't affected by world events, it isn't affected by, you know, the economy or, you know, job numbers or, you know, what may happen overseas or anything like that, it's completely, totally self-contained, what kinds of reactions do they have?
Well, I think that they're very glad that it's different, first of all. It's not the same old thing they've been investing in. It doesn't have the same old risk. The risks are much smaller. And that's what I think people like, when they realize it's just a life insurance policy. You don't have to get up at midnight. When they pass away, they will notify us, and we're going to pay, and the bank will pay. And it's just a much simpler situation. It's not where every other day, like the stock market, every other day it's falling. You know, and it'll go up real good, and then it just pancakes.
Yeah.
And it's all because of the world. Everything that happens in the world affects the stock market, and this is not affected by the stock market.
You basically set it and forget it and just wait.
That's all you do.
Wow.
That's why it works so good.
All right, Faye, so you've got some appointments coming up this week, right? You've got availability to see people?
Yep, I do.
All right, so one last time, what is your phone number for people to call you on Monday?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330.
You've been listening to Your Money with Faye Bagby. Sound advice to help your money grow. Listen for Your Money with Faye Bagby every Saturday morning at 10 here on 97 Gold.
This program has been a paid presentation for American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC, and has been brought to you by American Financial and Retirement Services, LLC. The opinions expressed on the program by the host, host guest, and call-in listeners are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not represent the opinions of management of this station or Brazos Communications West, LLC, who bear no responsibility or liability for the program's content. The purpose of this radio program is intended to inform the public on financial planning issues and investment products for qualified individuals and investors. Many of the topics and opinions discussed may be of a personal nature, and some people may disagree with or find opinions expressed on this program objectionable. Before you invest, you should consult with financial advisors and review the program prospectus and its risks.